Hello, and welcome to I Watch This As an Adult, the podcast where I watch movies from my childhood from an adult perspective. And this week, I will be reviewing 2000's Romeo Must Die. If you want to keep in touch with the podcast, follow me on Instagram on I Watch This As an Adult. And if you like what you hear, support the podcast by donating. Hit the support button and donate what you want. On with the show.
Okay, we're here.
All right. We're back on. Try it
we
again.
Are off. Okay, we are doing Romeo Must Die from 2000, and I am here with a special guest. I'm not sure if you want me to introduce you or you want to introduce yourself and tell everybody what you do.
Let me see your chops, man. Go ahead and introduce me.
Okay. With the owner of the Rundown South, C.L. Palmer. I'm not sure if you wanted me to say your whole name.
That's
or
cool.
Just,
that's what everybody knows me professionally as, C.L. Palmer.
Okay, that's it. All right. And we're going to be reviewing Romeo Must Die from 2000. This is, first of all, I want to say about this movie. This movie is very 2000s.
Man.
Very, very 2000s.
Hold on. Hold on. Before you really get deep into it, bro. Like I got to say something because honestly, when I started watching this movie, I was feeling like this could not be that bad. I felt great. You know, like I'm about to watch an oldie but a goodie.
Right.
Mm-mm-mm. I go ahead.
Okay.
Finish your intro. Like, I don't even know where to start. But finish.
This movie's very 2000s. This movie came out exactly 20 years ago. Exactly 20 years ago, this movie came out. And I've been doing that a lot, actually. And just by coincidence, I haven't even planned this. I've been doing a lot of movies that have been on like very, been doing a lot of movies that have done very important milestones. Like Romeo Must Die is 20. I did the net last week. That's 25 years old this month, this year.
I don't think I ever watched that.
Yeah, like it's not even worth it. It's boring. It's very fucking boring. And I was just like, oh God. I'm like watching the net. I'm not even gonna go into the trauma of the net, but like watching the net is like watching paint dry.
Ooh.
Honestly. Yes, exactly. But like I did this, I think Above the Rim turned 25.
Mm.
Like this a whole I've been doing like a whole bunch of movies that had like important milestones.
Right.
I'm doing another one next week that has an important milestone too. I actually planned that one. But anyway, it's 20 years old and it looks 20 years old. Like the aesthetics of this movie have not aged well. Everybody's wearing just like bright colors, you know?
Baggy jeans,
big FUBU jerseys.
Oh my God. Yo, I hadn't seen that 05 in a minute.
Yes. Because I was a teenager at the time this movie came out. So I was like, I think I had to be 15. I think I was 15 when this movie came out. And at that exact time, I had one of those FUBU jerseys. You know?
The style was ridiculous. Like, I had a bunch of them. Like, I had a bunch of jerseys, shirts.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's when the bootleg man was real big back in the day. And they used to just like open up the trunk and they had all the FUBU gear.
Right.
And you
can
buy a whole outfit at the barbershop.
Yes, I remember that. I remember that. Dude's coming in there, like, hey, I got the foo boo. You like, no, you got the poo foo.
Right.
But yeah, man, I was like, dude, I was looking at this. I'm like, this is how I used to dress at 15 years old. So this is me. Cause I had like the bootleg kind of like FUBU Dallas Cowboys jersey, you know, cause like I loved the Dallas Cowboys as a kid, as a teenager and as a kid, and I couldn't afford, my parents couldn't afford a Dallas Cowboys jersey, so they got me a bootleg Dallas Cowboys jersey. So I used to rock that a lot. So I was looking at that, I was like, oh my god, this fashion. You know,
yeah, man. The aesthetics of the whole movie just really threw me off, and you know, like I guess we can kind of get into it as we start breaking down the movie. But like, even like some of the hairstyles and the wigs on the black people made me question whether or not they were actually black. Because I seen a dude with an afro, and it was no doubt fake.
Yeah. That was the guy, when you said that, that was the guy that popped in my head, is the dude with the afro with the sunglasses.
Oh my god, bro. Like, that dude might have been like Dominican or something, because he definitely was not black, and they tried hard to make him into somebody who looked like he was black and could fight. But they ain't accomplished either one.
He didn't do either. I was like, that guy, like, his last name's not Johnson, his last name is Dominguez. But, the movie, like, obviously it's a play on Romeo and Juliet, you know. You got like these two crime families involved in a gang war. You got the Sings and the O'Days. The Sings' youngest son, Poe, is murdered. Nobody knows who did it, and like the word of Poe's death gets to his older brother Han, who's in prison in China, played by Jet Li.
Now he is a police officer that they just never mentioned that in the movie, but it's mentioned in the plot.
I know. Yeah, I know because I had to do. Because when I was doing my research, it's in the research. Like when you go on IMDb or when you go on like Wikipedia, it's in the Wikipedia page that he's a police officer.
I'm just like, okay, well, why is he in prison? So many questions.
I think he went because I believe he went to prison, and I don't even explain why he went to prison, but he explains at the end of the movie that he went to prison for his father, but they don't explain what he did.
Yeah.
So
this is a Swiss cheese movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of plot holes,
to put it lightly. I'm gonna follow your lead, because there's so many things we can get into with this.
Yeah, but like the movie has a pretty decent cast, though. The cast is not bad. This is Jet Li's first U.S. starring role. This is not his first U.S. movie, but it's his first starring role. This is like the first one for him, because before this, he was in Lethal Weapon 4.
I remember that.
Yes, he was in Lethal Weapon. That's his first U.S. role. But when the problem I have with Jet Li in America, because I'm a huge Jet Li fan, going back his movie. Yeah. Going back to his movies in China, you know, like I enjoy like his movie, like his favorite movie of mine is called The Enforcer in China. It's called I think it's called The Bodyguard. But I know, like, it's called The Bodyguard in China, but when it came over to America, because we already have a bodyguard, they called it The Enforcer. So,
okay,
I like that movie a lot. But when he came over here to America, it just feels like they tried their best to make him like the second coming of Jackie Chan.
Right.
You know, it was just like, they tried too hard with all the fight scenes to make him Jackie Chan. like he was like picking up things and, you know, doing like using inanimate objects to fight people and all this stuff.
Right.
And it's being real. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yes.
But like, you know, you're a Jet Li fan, so you watched a lot of fighting movies and fighting scenes. And
yes,
one of the biggest things that determines whether or not it's believable is the choreographic of each scene. And
right,
it's like this dude probably never watched Jet Li before, because
oh yeah,
he had no idea what to do with Jet Li and did not think about, well, maybe I should get some people that might know how to fight on the other end to make this a little bit more believable.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, he could still, I'm like, he could still fight the same dudes, but like, he's just fighting like he didn't fight like Jet Li.
No.
It, like, they had him fighting like Jackie Chan, and Jet Li and Jackie Chan have two very different fighting styles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because Jet Li is a more aggressive fighter. He's a wushu. He's a like a wushu champion. Like, he's been in tournaments. He's fought in tournaments. And Jackie Chan's style is a little bit more comedic. But like, Jackie Chan, like, look, Jackie Chan, I'm not taking anything away from Jackie. Jackie is a legit dude. Like, any of us could, like, I would not challenge Jackie Chan to a fight in real life, because I know he'd kick my ass. But in his movies, they make him more slapstick and comical. And I think he does it so he could you know, relate to kids. You know, like, he wants kids to come and see his movies. So, like, he's going to keep the violence at a minimum, you know.
Right.
So, but Jet Li is a more aggressive fighter, and I just wish there were, like, more, like, practical fights in this movie, and none of this, like, because, like, this is how a fight scene starts. A fight scene in Romeo Must Die starts off really good. Like, it starts off good, and then it just goes off the rails with, like, just wires and special effects and, you know, like, all this stuff. I'm just a fan of, because, like, I'm a fan of, like, Hong Kong cinema. And, like, I'm just a fan of practical fights, you know?
I 100% agree with you. Like, you know, I like Ip Man, you know what I'm saying? Like, ever since I discovered that on Netflix, it charged me up to want to seek out more martial arts films, but they're just not making them here in America at all. I'm a little disappointed in that. But yeah, like, it seems like in Romeo Must Die, they decided that it probably wouldn't be too important to just, I don't know, you know, practice a few times and make sure these guys got in the right place when they got hit, and just, like you said, make it a little bit more practical. Like, it just seems so, like, he was superhuman at some points. And then, like, you add in the special effects, it was totally gratuitous. You didn't even need it.
Yeah. It was not believable, because even the last fight that he has with the guy, the guy Kai at the end, it's like they have a pretty good fight for the most part, but then they kind of kill it towards the end with, like, just wires and stuff.
It's right there. It's like, y'all got it. Y'all.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was aggressive. It was like they were, like, taking it to a second gear. But towards the end, he just killed it with just, like, the special effects. I was like, I'm out of it now.
Yeah. I'm like, it made me think, like, damn, did Mortal Kombat just take that from Romeo Must Die? Because I don't know if you played Mortal Kombat XL or the new one, but that's basically, like, every cutscene in a fight looks just like that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, man. It was like some video game.
It was very video game like.
It was very video game. But, like moving on, another person in this movie, another elephant in the room in this movie is Aaliyah. Is it this movie? This is her cinematic debut in movies. She's trying to cross over from music to movies. And I have to say, she's pretty good in this movie.
She killed it.
She's pretty good in this movie. Like, the charisma just jumps off the screen.
Yes.
With Aaliyah. Like, she, I'm like, she had it. She had the it. She knew what it, she knew where the camera was. She knew how to recite her lines. You know, she even had like an emotional scene in the movie that was believable.
Right.
You know,
it wasn't so, over the top. It was right on point.
Exactly. And like, I was like, dude, man, if she was still around today, I was like, she would be a superstar.
I believe so. The only thing that I didn't see the director even bother to do is kind of even play with the fact that she was sexy. You know, because she came off like very cute and very irresistible, but I didn't get the sexy from her at all. And like, just knowing me from what I know from outside of Lee, that's kind of what she's known for, is like, she has this real like young, I guess young girl. I hate to say that, but you know, it's not an old woman. We're talking about a younger woman. So not in, you know what I'm getting at.
She was more of like a smooth, like more smooth, you know, like, yeah, like a smooth girl, you know. And like, it was because, no, like, this isn't anything groundbreaking or anything, because I had a huge crush on Aaliyah growing up, you know. So, but like, and like, she's always seemed like very cool. Yeah, like, she always seemed very cool, very smooth, and just like, she knows how to work her sex appeal.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
You know what? I'll say this, and I'll just sum it up like this: when I looked at her on screen, I felt like whatever she asked me to do, I would probably say yes. It didn't matter actually what she was asking me to do. It's just the fact when I looked at her face, it's like, what do you want? What do you need? I will take care of it. And she used that look a couple times, and I was like, man, I do not know anybody who even translates like that across the screen like that anymore. She was truly one of a kind.
Right. Yeah, I was like, I was just superstar. She would have been, man. Like, I was like, this, because like, there's this thing about me where like, I feel like there's like alternate realities, you know. I feel like there's alternate realities, and
like
I feel
Rick
like
Morty.
yeah, kind of like Rick and Morty, like alternate realities where like, Aaliyah's a superstar. Biggie, Biggie's alive and he's a mogul. You know,
right?
You know, he's doing everything that Jay-Z's doing now. And there was this other actor who passed away, I think, in like the early 90s, River Phoenix. Have you ever heard of River Phoenix?
Not top of my head.
Yeah, but like, River Phoenix, he was like a child actor, and he's in like one of my favorite movies called Stand By Me. It just came out like the mid-80s. And even then, when he was a kid, it was like 10 or 11 years old there. Even then, when he was a kid, it was like, watch out for him. He's going to be a superstar. And like, I got this kind of feel like.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just looked him up.
Oh, yeah. Joaquin Phoenix, the guy that played the Joker, that's his little brother.
Okay.
Yeah. That's his little brother, Joaquin Phoenix, the guy that recently played the Joker. And I just feel like that dude would have been, if he was still alive, there wouldn't be a Leonardo DiCaprio. I feel like.
So he's the market correction.
Yes. And like, I was just like, that. I just like certain things I just think about, like alternate realities. I'm like, Aaliyah's a superstar, Biggie's a mogul, and River Phoenix is the greatest actor of all time right now. You know, so like,
right, he's Wolf of Wall Street right now.
He's Wolf of Wall Street. He's in Titanic. He's in Django. He's doing all of these things. You know?
You're about to make me like watch two or three of his movies because that is an interesting paradigm. And I've, you know, my dude Bill Simmons, he always talks about what they say sliding door moments.
And right.
That's definitely one of those like sliding door moments. Like if that doesn't happen, like does Leonardo DiCaprio become Leonardo DiCaprio? So I can't even really talk about it, but from what you're saying, yes, definitely.
Yeah, because like at one point they were actually, I think I looked this up, like they were actually out for the same role of What's Eating Gilbert Grape, like in like this is like the early 90s. And River Phoenix doesn't get the role because he dies.
Mm.
And Leonardo DiCaprio gets that role, and that's the role that shot him into superstardom.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. I did not know that, but that's worth a deep dive, bro. You need to write that whole blog post. I'm gonna need you to take one of these days, get all your notes together, and make that blog post. I'll read it.
All right. Whenever I get a day to do that,
even publish it and help you promote it because that is interesting. Like, you know, I talk about, you know, like you said, like the Biggie Jay-Z, that's another sliding door moment. Does Jay-Z become the Jay-Z we know? If Biggie doesn't come along, or, you know.
Yeah.
What's another?
Just like I feel like with Aaliyah, there would be no Beyonce. I feel like that.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know about that one.
I'm just saying.
You know, because the thing is, like, even at that time, Beyonce was still in Destiny's Child.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like we never even got a chance to see them going like head to head, really, because she was still in the group. But I think, like, the formula is for the best singer to leave the group after like three albums. Now, right. Whether or not she becomes Queen B, Beyonce. That's a whole nother subject.
So I was just saying, I think Beyonce would be around, but I don't think she would be as big. Just saying. I think she would be here. She would be here, but I don't think she would be as big.
Man, that's you know what, man? That we might have to go back and do that one too. Cause I'm thinking like You got some interesting sliding doors right there. Like that, there are three sliding doors all in this movie at the same time, and I didn't even see that.
Right. But
continue, man. Wow.
But yeah, moving on from Aaliyah, she's good in this movie. Delroy Lindo, who plays Isaac O'Day, Aaliyah's father, he's great in this movie. You know
what was his name? What was his business?
I think he was like a real estate developer. They never really don't go into details into nothing. Anything in this movie.
But continue. I just wanted to see if you caught that. I wasn't sure. But yes, my man's was doing, he did good. Continue. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem. But Delroy Lindo is great in this movie. I like the way I've always kind of low-key been a fan of Delroy Lindo. Recently, he was in The Five Bloods. Have you seen The Five Bloods?
I saw The Five Bloods, and I was like, damn, he's in this.
Yeah, he's standout. He's the standout in this movie, in The Five Bloods. But, like, dude, like, Delroy Lindo has always been very kind of, like, low-key. It's just, like, acting is just, like, breathing to him type. He's that type of guy.
Right. Just wake up and just in character, like, yeah, he does not seem like you could stretch.
Yeah, you could tell like he was like a theater kid, mm-hmm. You know, like you could tell he just screams theater kid, like he's been doing this for a long time and it's nothing to him, you know.
Definitely, man. He's definitely one of those guys that, you know, needs to get his flowers, you know, while he's still around.
Yeah. Very, he's very underrated. But I also have the question about Delroy Lindo, though, is he LeBron James's father?
What?
You don't see the resemblance.
Let me look at this dude. Yeah. I don't think he's tall enough.
You don't think he's tall enough?
I don't think he's tall enough. LeBron is 6'8".
Yeah.
They do have a meme of both of them, though.
Yeah, I'm just... Because we've... it's funny because I was watching Romeo Must Die. Me and my wife were watching Romeo Must Die. We were like, oh my God. We were like, he looks like an older version of LeBron James. We were both saying that.
Yeah, yeah. There's a little something there, especially with like beard LeBron.
Yeah.
He definitely got that look. I can see that. But he might be an uncle. He definitely might be an uncle.
He might be. Who knows? But I don't really think he's his father, but it's a speculation, it's just saying.
It's up there. Contenders, like, you're gonna have to show up to the meet when we try to figure this out, but
right, you know. Get that DNA test ready,
right?
But another guy out here, Isaiah Washington, I think he's a pretty serviceable villain as Mac. I think he did a pretty good job as that character, really.
Go ahead. I'm gonna let you finish, and then I want to say something.
Yeah, he was. I felt like he was really sinister. That's one thing he does in here that's kind of, dude. That's kind of fucked up. You know, but like he's on the dock and like he puts the gun to the guy's head and puts his head in the crabs.
Yes,
I was like, dude, that's kind of evil.
Yeah, homie was ill. The thing that, all right, so since you brought it up, I could not understand why they didn't establish that this motherfucker was gangster from jump. Like, to me,
right,
that scene should have been at the beginning of the movie.
So the crab scene?
Yes. So it could set the tone for who Mac is. Know that he's not to be played with. So when he's subduing himself next to Aaliyah, it has a little bit more impact.
I think there were little instances that he might be like just like a grimy motherfucker. Because like even like when he's sitting at the table with Aaliyah, he's a little abusive, you know. So. He's a little abusive there. He smacks Anthony Anderson in the face.
Yeah, that was ill. You know, I was like, oh, you know, that's when I got the first clue that he was gangster like that. But yeah. I mean, I would have felt, put it like this: when you watching John Wick,
right?
You know John Wick bad because he do something bad within the first 15 minutes of the movie. Right. I didn't really know he was that bad. So it's just like, damn, why he doing like that? You know, I'm questioning him, his gangster, instead of knowing that he's gangster.
Right.
Nigga?
I don't know. Maybe they just wanted it to build. I don't know.
I don't know. Do you have a specific section where you talk about directors and writers?
Actually, I don't.
Okay. Well, let's get through the all the characters, and then we'll circle back around to them because I have some notes.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, man. But I think Isaiah Washington, he's a serviceable villain. Like, he's like you said, towards the end, he starts getting like real grimy. Kind of disappointed that, but I guess it had to be this way because like the way that they set up the main villains is kind of like, you know, because Aaliyah kills Mac. I guess they had to set that up because like that was because we found out like everything that's happening in the two families is in house, you know. So I guess she had to take care of her dirty work, and Jet Li had to take care of his dirty work. Pretty much, I guess that's how they had to set it up.
Right. And he actually only gives like one of the only memorable lines, which is, that's some cold shit. He gets shot by Aaliyah.
Yeah.
That's probably like one of the most quotable lines in the whole movie, which is, says a lot.
And he also says the title.
Yes. And doesn't even say it. All right, Romeo, I guess you gotta die. He didn't even say you must die. I'm like, mother.
I was like, wow. But yeah, on the flip coin of Isaiah Washington, Russell Long was not a serviceable villain. I thought he was kind of terrible. He played Kai. He was like the muscles, kind of like the Chinese version of Isaiah. You know, Matt. I really wasn't feeling him. I really just think that he was really the actor himself, Russell Wong. I just really think he was like really focused on looking good than acting.
He did. You know? He was trying to make sure he had the glasses right, the hair was right.
He was a little bit too much on like his sexy flexy, you know.
shout out to Riley Freeman, sexy flexy ass niggas, bro.
Sexy flexy, yeah. Russell Wong was too busy trying to be a sexy flexy ass nigga, but Eddie. And I found out that he also used to be a dancer.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, he.
There we go.
He actually used to. I looked at his wiki and it said he used to dance with Janet Jackson in the 80s.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's a great note. Not so much makes sense. That your whole mentality makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I see how you ended up getting on Empire too. So.
Right. But yeah, man, but like, yeah, he did that. But another thing in this movie, like, another thing, they played the fuck out of the soundtrack. They played the hell out of the soundtrack. It's like they get any chance they get, they playing a track from the soundtrack. You're like, what? I heard Aaliyah, DMX, you know, just and I'm trying to think who else was on the soundtrack. I can't really think who else was on the soundtrack.
Dudes, I know I had never heard of, for sure. And I probably never heard of again. Now, real quick, man, you didn't mention all the starring actors before we get into the soundtrack.
Oh, I guess DMX is not in this movie very often.
So. But he's starring in the movie. But he's listed as starring in the movie and literally has two scenes.
Yeah, he has two scenes. I was like, that's what I say. I'm like, it's not even worth mentioning, you know? Because, like,
Mention it because he was in the promo. He was all over the shit. They made you feel like DMX was in this movie.
Yeah, I know, because he is in the trailer too.
He's in the trailer. That's what I'm saying. Like that was very deceptive. I did not appreciate them putting DMX in this movie. Tell me he was starring in it just to be in the first scene and the last scene, which looks like they did on the same day in the club.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it looks like he's wearing the same shirt.
It looks like he's wearing the same shirt, and it's definitely the same place. So
yeah,
that to me, that was ridiculous. I did not appreciate that. I was shaking my fist at the screen.
Yeah, yeah, man. I was like, this dude's wearing the same shirt. This, all this stuff had to happen within the span of a week.
Undoubtedly had to, but I had to get that out there before you start talking about the music. Because DMX is on the soundtrack and he has a song with Aaliyah, which actually still bangs.
Oh yeah, Back in One Piece. I messed with that song too. But yeah, I was a DMD. I'm not gonna lie. Back when I was 15 and I went to go see this movie, I remember my dad took me to go see this movie. This movie's rated R, so, but I was like, wow, dad. But anyway, DMX was one of the selling points for me because I was big DMX fan growing up.
Who was not? I'm right there with you.
You weren't a fan of the dog?
I definitely was. You know, hold on. You know what I'm saying? When it comes to the dog, you got a ball. You know what I mean? Definitely a fan of the dog.
He possessed you.
Bro, I do it all the time. I freak people out. But it's one of my best impressions that I can do. I can do a few different ones, but he's definitely the easiest one.
Awesome. But yeah, man, that was a huge fan of DMX growing up, man. And like, he was one of the seller points to get me to go see this movie. I was like, oh man, DMX is in here? Oh, I gotta go see this. But yeah, man. But that soundtrack, man, they played the hell out of that soundtrack. I think I said this on my Above the Rim episode, because like, that's another movie that plays the hell out of their soundtrack. And it's a great soundtrack, but I always say that was like, think about, and this goes into your thing about plot holes too. It's like, when there's a movie that's like catered, because this movie was very catered to Black folks.
It's right.
Whenever there is a movie that's catered to Black folks, especially back in those days, the soundtrack matters more than the plot.
It drove the interest in the movie. Without a question.
Exactly.
Because that actually debuted at number 3 on the charts. It sold 1.5 million copies of that soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. But yeah, it was like, whenever you got a movie that's catered towards Black folks, they gonna push that soundtrack. They like, fuck a plot. What's that soundtrack like?
What the soundtrack hitting folks out?
Yeah, it was like, just like that soundtrack better hit. You know,
it is like, definitely required.
I don't care what they doing in the movie. That soundtrack, it better be the shit. You know,
absolutely, man. And you know, and I'll say this, because I felt like they used the soundtrack a lot, but they didn't use it enough, because the score for the whole movie was absolutely atrocious. Like, every scene that did not have an actual song had a terrible score to it. And the ones that did, sometimes they even had the wrong song for the moment. And it was messing with the scene.
Oh, yeah. I know, there was like the opening scene when the brother gets killed, when Jet Li's brother gets killed.
Like, oh my god. Yeah, that shit was trash, bro.
That music was not fitting at all. It was not fitting.
No, they seem to have a tough time knowing what type of music to use for the movie. And I didn't actually look to see who scored the movie. I actually should have looked it up. That probably been some good research.
I think it was a guy named Marcus Miller. I really did. I should have did something on him. I didn't. But I've seen his name on a good amount of movies, like when it comes to musical scores. But I don't remember the movies, but I think I saw it. It was like, they say it's music score by Marcus Miller.
Okay. So I just looked him up, and he's a bass guitarist. He does do film composition, but he mostly did jazz. Now, I'm going to just say this, because I'm an actual hip hop fan. If you was going to make a martial arts film infused with hip hop, who is the first person you would call?
RZA.
Exactly. Exactly.
Automatically.
Like, who the fuck said we should not call RZA? Because I don't think there should have been any other choices. Like, that's it. That's the guy. He's the guy that's going to do it.
He's the guy. Yeah, exactly. I was like, as soon as you were talking about that, I was like, RZA popped up in my head immediately.
And it's like, that score, it just felt like, if they would have just added that, it probably would have felt a little bit more believable and engaging. Because I think about how he killed Bill. Like every moment of that movie is engaging.
And even though Man with the Iron Fist is not that good of a movie, the score is good.
The score is fire. I will watch that again just to hear the score. Like, yeah, those are cool ass beats.
He even throws some Wu-Tang in there.
Yeah,
because they do Shame on the Nigga. Yeah, Shame on the Nigga is in on is in the Man with the Iron Fist.
Yeah, that one was lit. Now I might have to go watch that again, because that was like 75% there. Like, the idea on paper was great. Execution, another story. Yeah. But let's get back to Romeo.
Yeah. Because
I can actually talk about that.
But yeah, man, I mean, there's really not much more for me to say about this movie. I mean, like, I still had fun with the movie, you know, like, it's very nostalgic. And I like looking at Leah, but
right.
But there's really not much else for me to say about this movie.
Well,
really,
okay. I'll throw this in here, because we didn't actually talk about Anthony Anderson. But he plays basically like the glue guy in the whole movie. He brings a little bit of, you know, seriousness. You can definitely tell he's fresh out of acting school.
Right.
No mustache. Definitely looks a little different with no mustache. Still had to wait on.
I think he...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'll let you... But I think he just got finished... Because, like, he... I don't know if you know this, because Anthony Anderson got his start on a teen NBC show called Hang Time. If you remember Hang Time, it's kind of like Saved by the Bell, but with basketball.
I remember that. That sounds so familiar.
Yeah, like, that was his first start. Like, he was like, I think he was 18, I want to say.
Okay.
And he started on Hang Time. And I think he had just got off that show, because he was on that show for a while. I think he had just got off that show when he did Romeo Must Die, and that's the reason he doesn't have a mustache or anything, because he just got finished playing a teenager, pretty much.
Okay. You know? So. Yeah, it wasn't the best look for him. I'm just gonna say that. I'm sure he knows that now. But I thought he did a pretty good job, and I'm kind of disappointed that he didn't end up like being a star in the movie, because he's definitely like supporting actor in this movie. He has so much more screen time than DMX. I just really wish they would have wrote him a few better scenes so he could have did something. But I appreciate him being in that movie and being part of that time. You know, I guess like in history, because like he's, you know, he's basically around for Jet Li's first movie and Aaliyah's first movie, as far as like big time stuff.
Yeah, and I think this is his first movie role as well. I didn't really look into that, but like, I think this is his first movie role, because I said he was on a teen sitcom before this, you know. So I think he just got off Hang Time when he did this movie.
Right. Okay. I'm actually look that up, and I'm gonna say one more thing, and I guess we could wrap up. Now, I guess because I'm looking at how Hollywood is right now, and I'm looking back to see, like, 20 years ago, when we talked about Hollywood being, you know, black people being marginalized in Hollywood was a much, much bigger issue. It just was not talked about. And I feel like looking into this movie is like a pure example of like, you don't have any black people in your writing room, yet you are writing a movie with black people in it. You are directing a movie with black people in it. And I could feel from the writing to the director, nobody had any idea what to do with black people at all.
I see that as well.
Let me see, what's this guy's name? Eric Burnt, I think that's what his name is.
Writer.
Yes, he wrote Virtuosity. I never seen it, but it stars Denzel Washington and Russell Crowe, and it's one of worst trailers I've ever seen, and you could not pay me to sit down for 10 minutes to watch that.
I've actually seen Virtuosity.
You've seen it?
It is not. I think I saw it when I was like 11 or 12 years old. And like, it came on like cable. Like HBO or something. I saw it. I was like, yeah, this movie's bad. And I was like, this movie is terrible.
Yeah, man.
If he wrote Virtuosity, God help him.
But that's who you had in the writer's room on Romeo Must Die. So, you know, you can see what I'm talking about. Like, we can't get in the writer's room to do some of this stuff. That's what's going on. Like, you write trash movies and you get another one to write.
No, that's true. That's true. Because, like, I think had a black person writing Virtuosity, he wouldn't be writing again.
Right. Exactly. I don't know what happened to your audio. You seem like you're a little far now.
Can you hear me? Okay. Yeah. But, that's what I was saying. I was just saying, like, yeah, and a black person refers to Virtuosity. Like, they wouldn't be writing the game. That'd be the end.
It'd be the end of your career. You go find you a job at Whole Foods or whatever else you want to do, because you ain't going to be in Hollywood no more.
Exactly.
And
It's just like with black actors, like black and white actors. It's like white actors can get so many opportunities to be stars. Like, there's this one kid they were trying to push. What's his name? There was a couple of them, but he was a kid. He did a movie called John Carter. Taylor Kitsch. That was his name. And he used to be on Friday Night Lights. The TV show Friday Night Lights. And they tried their hardest to make him a star. Their hardest. Anyway, he did John Carter. John Carter lost so much money for Disney. Got a dude fired.
Oh my goodness.
Like, I think it was Bob Iger, the head of Disney. He was so mad that John Carter lost so much money, he fired a guy. But Taylor Kitsch kept getting roles. I was like, had that been a black guy that did that, had that been like Brandon T. Jackson, you know, that did John Carter, that'd be the end of Brandon T. Jackson.
Right.
He would get no more roles. I mean, we don't really see him now, but had he bombed that terribly.
He would have went away quietly. That's
yes.
He would have gotten market corrected, and they would have found a new one. Goodbye.
Exactly. But they tried so hard to make Taylor Kitsch a superstar. I'm like, he even got to play Gambit.
You know, yeah. He got them handed to him. It just wasn't it, man.
And it's the worst Gambit I've ever seen. It was insult to me because Gambit is one of my favorite X-Men characters.
Yo, he's so underrated. He cool as shit.
Yeah, I was doubly pissed. I was like, the dude from John Carter got to play Gambit.
And then I'm going to say one more thing on the writing, because I like I said, I wanted to really bring these guys to task for some of the stuff that was in his dialogue. and what they were doing with the looks. Like I said, the afros we were talking about, ridiculous. The do-rags, like everything was just ridiculous. And one of the things that stuck out the most was the fact that nobody was actually referred to as their family name. Everybody was the blacks and the Chinese. And I was like, this is definitely written by a white person who didn't really care about people and their identities.
Exactly. I was like, we got names.
Got names, bro. Not the blacks and the Chinese. The like, oh, they. Whatever, man. Just call it.
Yeah. I said their names. I'm like, they're Sings and the ODs. That's their names.
That's their names. But in the whole movie, all the dialogue is the blacks and the Chinese.
Right.
But you already know, if it had been a mob family with some white folks, it'd have been the Gambino family, the, you know, whoever.
The Luciani,
all that shit, man. We ain't get that in this film. We ain't get to feel like the mob. We was the blacks and the Chinese. So shout out to y'all for just showing how racism works in Hollywood. But that's all I got to say on that.
Yeah. But yeah, but like, I still have fun with the movie because of nostalgia, pretty much, you know. But overall, I still like kind of enjoyed the movie. Even though it had plot holes, it was a fun watch. Usually, what I do at the end of the movie, I give out scores.
Okay.
For the movie, for its rewatchability quality. I go from a 4 to 5. I mean, like not a 4 to 5, from 1 to 5. And I give this movie a 4 out of 5 for rewatchability.
A 4 out of 5 for rewatchability.
Yes.
All right. I'm gonna have to get his 2 scores because I think it depends on what eyes you're looking at it with. Because if you are an Aaliyah fan, this movie is a 5 out of 5 rewatch because you will not see a collection of video on Aaliyah that will make you miss her more. You know what I'm saying? Like, not to get you teary-eyed, but just to be like, man, she's just that enjoyable. But as far as the movie, I watched it with my old lady and I kept asking, I'm like, did I miss something? Did I miss, like, I asked her like 4 times throughout the movie. So if you like watching movies, don't watch this movie. Like, your head will hurt. So I'm going to have to give it like 2 out of 5. Like, it was,
2 out of 5?
Yes.
Okay. I just had to give it a 4 out of 5 because, like, I mean, like, Del Orlando carries it. Aaliyah carries it. Isaiah Washington does his job. You know? And it was just like, just those guys trying, you know, to make this a good movie just, like, won me over.
So it's like, if you're more of a fan of the actors, you're just like, I'm going to support you guys because you're trying so hard in this piece of trash to make your money.
Yes,
I could sympathize, like, with that. That's real.
Yes.
Okay. You know what? Yes. I'll give it an extra one. I'll go 3 out of 5 for that. We'll go 3.
Yes. Thank you. But
that's it, though.
No more. Yeah. That's it. I'm done talking about it. you got anything you wanna promote, or you want anybody to know where they can find you?
If you want to holler at me personally, I'm at CL The Main Event on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. But I'm just going to tell you, don't do it. I don't even know why I told you to do it in the first place. But if you really want to get in touch with me, hit at The Rundown South on every single platform. And if you are a podcaster and you need podcast resources, I mean, whether it's like what apps to use, tech support, you trying to book people for your podcast, join Podtex on the Slack channel. We are building something great. I promise you, you're going to want to be there.
Okay. Well, that's it. show pretty much. So
you don't have a sign off?
I don't really have a sign off, so I just say peace.
Alright, so we just like Airbnb and Rakim. Peace.
Peace.
Peace. All right.